A monumental embarrassment. The Louvre reopening for the first time since Sunday's heist of the century. We'll follow leads in a daylight robbery, now estimated at 88 million euros. Check security at the world's most visited museum. For now, the shuttering on the getaway window looks as tenuous as the standing of the under pressure president of the Louvre. She earlier answered to a French Senate panel. Beyond security lapses, is the 800-year-old fortress turned palace turned museum simply too big to deal with the age of over-tourism and shrinking public funding? And after the 2019 fire at Notre Dame Cathedral, it's yet another cherished landmark, making world news for all the wrong reasons. How much can a jewelry caper fuel the general feeling by citizens in this country that they're being, pardon the pun, ripped off by elected leaders who don't deliver? Today in the France 24 debate, we're looking at France's heist of the century. With us from Amsterdam, he's helped recover stolen or lost Picassos, Dalis, and Van Goghs, our crime detective Arthur Brand. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Private tour guide Anya Firestone, founder of luxury tours and events organizer Maison Firestone. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you for having me.
The stolen gems run in his family. Prince Joachim Murat, direct descendant of the marshal of the same name, and whose husband, Napoleon's sister, Caroline Bonaparte. Thank you for being with us here in the France.
Thank you for having me.
And art historian Ernst Ulrich Leben. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
You can always listen. That's right. Listen to the France 24 debate wherever podcasts are streamed. Yeah, doors opened on time. And even though the Apollo wing is still shuttered, the visiting public eager for a brush with the scene of the crime.
Looking for what we need to meet to go into the Louvre today.
Okay. So, did you hear talking about the robbery over there?
Oh,
yes.
Very exciting.
No.
Like Ocean's 11.
Disappointing.
Well, it's something surprising. It seemed that fiction became real, because we didn't think that they were going to steal such precious jewels so easily.
It's certainly increased our fascination with the area. We're not typically museum individuals, but knowing that there had just been a heist pulled off in broad daylight certainly increased the profile of the gallery, no doubt.
All right. Your reaction, Joachim Murat, that Canadian tourist saying, well, I'm not much of a museum goer, but now I'm interested.
Okay, so, you know, that's the day we are living now. So when you have something hitting the news, everyone wants to witness the sight. You know, when you have a car crash and on the highway, everybody slow down to look at the car crash. It's exactly the same kind of symptom as we are experiencing now.
There was a lot of anguish the last 4 days, and now people taking it more in a tongue-in-cheek manner?
Kind of. The weird thing is that too. But I think that your guest specialized in art crimes will develop much more than I do. But the comparison with Ocean 11 is completely overrated, because absolutely not. And the guys, they use a ladder, a saw, came in, came out in a hurry. Apparently, from the video footage we have seen on the social media, they were completely shocked by the fact that the alarm started, and it started to be a mess. And then the security guard chased them, apparently. And so they lost a bit of their nerve and ran away too fast. They forgot to fire to unlight the truck.
They dropped Eugenie's crown, or they just decided that they couldn't take it on the scooter.
Apparently they dropped it. So I don't know, but it looks like they dropped it in a hurry. I mean, they were too much in a rush.
Arthur Brandt, what does that tell you? The modus operandi.
Well, these are professional thieves for sure. They have done this before. This is not their first theft. It's not like, you know, you wake up on Sunday morning thinking, I want to become a thief. Let's try the Louvre. So these criminals have done this before. They probably are known to the police, but the police still has not connected them to this robbery. They made mistakes, they dropped some stuff, but that happens in every case. But these people are professionals. This is not their first art heist.
What makes you say they're professionals?
Well, obvious, you know, if you make it into the Louvre and out of the Louvre, with the French crown jewels, and after 4 days, you are still on the loose, you are not an amateur.
All right, it's a caper filled with ironic twists, like, for instance, the name of the Paris suburb where that bucket truck used to hoist the ladder was stolen 9 days beforehand. Daniel Quinlan gives us the name.
This may be the clue that helps the investigation move forward. The police trace the origin of this vehicle-mounted mechanical lift, which was used by the criminals to access the first floor of the Louvre. The vehicle was stolen about 40 kilometres from Paris, in a town, and you couldn't make this up, called Louvre. The story begins here on the 10th of October last year. The owner of the truck, which was for sale on a classified ads website, was contacted by a buyer. But at the time of sale, the criminals threatened him and stole his vehicle. Seeing these images broadcast repeatedly by the media, the man recognized his property and immediately notified police.
It's important to collect the testimony of the person who sold his vehicle and must have physically met someone. We don't know if it was the criminals themselves or an accomplice, and that's precisely why this testimony will be extremely important.
The investigation is continuing with the collection of evidence, scientific analysis, and the hearing of numerous witnesses. This robbery continues to put pressure on the government. Faced with the controversy over security flaws, this afternoon the Minister of Culture responded to the attacks.
Were the Louvre Museum security measures inadequate? No, they were not inadequate. It's a reality. The Louvre Museum security measures worked.
The Paris public prosecutor revealed this evening that the value of the theft is estimated at 88 million euros.
Arthur Brand, care to fact-check what the culture minister said in that report? Was security up to snuff?
Well, you know, every museum in the world has been a victim of art theft. Every museum, the British Museum, the museums in the Netherlands and Germany. So either the security directors do something wrong, which I doubt, there are some other problems. There is never enough money for security. Museums prefer to spend money on exhibitions and stuff like that. The buildings are sometimes old, they are too big. We don't want to have guards with arms. We don't want to have shootings in a museum. And we also don't want to turn museums into a fortress because we want the public to see these treasures. So I think it's not a problem of the Louvre. I want to defend them a little bit, the security director and the other people working there. This happens, can happen, and has happened to every museum in the world.
Ernst Ulrich Lebert,
yes.
You were saying your first trip to the Louvre was in
1964, but it's not
just to give people who've never been a sense. Just how big is the Louvre?
Incredibly big. I mean, you can do only like some galleries in a day when you visit, and I try to avoid the galleries where everybody goes because the Louvre is today like impossible because there are just like too many people. And what I find very interesting is that the behavior has changed a lot because I was told by my parents since my childhood that this is a very special place. And so you had to behave in a certain way in order to show respect to the history. I don't say only French history because it's a museum of history of the humanities. And what I saw last Friday when I was there with an American group actually is somehow astonishing because you have really problems to climb up the steps and people are sitting there and having their photos with the handies taken. So I think it's also the change of the attitude of the visitors who go there as I would perhaps go in a shopping mall or on a fun fair. So there's a lack of civility from the side of the visitors, which I find very sad because it's not a fun fair. It's you go there because you want to learn. We had the privilege to study art at university and it should be like you know why you go there and not just to have a good time.
When did this change take place, this feeling that the Louvre was overcrowded?
But I think the big change for me is the COVID factor, which has made all our cities in Europe somehow impossible. I mean, it's the same. I was in Berlin 2 years ago and I was horrified by what I see on the sidewalks, because you just say like, okay, what's changing? Perhaps I'm getting old and I'm old fashioned in how I dress and how I look. And but it's somehow very strange, because you feel foreign in the town where you have been since you are a student. And I feel the same like in Paris today. There were so many crowds on the sidewalks that you try to avoid the center of town and you go somehow into the suburbs, I mean intramuros, where you think like, oh, this is how Paris was and where normal French people live. I wonder where French people are today when you go into the center of town, you know?
Let me ask you, on your Firestone, U.S. visitors, they used to come, what, in the summertime and during school holidays. Now they're here all year round. You cater to U.S. visitors.
I cater to doing private visits for mostly U.S. tourists. But yes, it would be July and August typically is the height of the season, but that has changed. Mm-hmm. And especially with the facility of people coming to Paris, especially from, if they're flying in from the East Coast, from New York, it's actually quite an easy trip for most now. And the museums don't really retain that completely full capacity like they did only in the summer. In fact, I'd say it was in May. It had one of the most busiest days I've ever seen when I was there with clients.
So should they limit the number of people allowed in?
I mean, at the moment, they do limit the number of people in, but it's still up to about 30,000 visitors. And the irony is, it used to be so impossible to navigate the Louvre. That's why I.M. Pei was commissioned to not just create that pyramid, but he really did an incredible underground archaeological dig, kicking out the Ministry of Finance and Richelieu, making it extremely accessible, putting bathrooms in. And it almost, unfortunately, bit itself on the tail, because it became quite accessible, it became quite welcoming, it became quite popular, that it's the most visited museum now. And I do think there needs to be some sort of cap, perhaps, on how many per day, which I think they're trying to do. And I think on the side of the visitors, if I'm taking private clients and it's a skip the line experience, that's one thing. But I think most people need to be okay with reserving online and getting a time slot, because it's not like it used to be when you can just decide to stroll into a museum. You have to plan it like a flight or a hotel.
Joachim Murat, these last 4 days, have you been rethinking how the Louvre should be?
Ah, exactly as it is today. I mean, I don't think that we should silo the Louvre and cut it into pieces to make it safer. I don't think so. The thing is that, you know, the Louvre is, as itself, as a building, is already an incredible beauty. Mm. It's within the most beautiful city on Earth. Mm. We can assume that Venice is a bit, but Venice is facing the same over-tourism situation. Mm-hmm. It's one of the most beautiful, if not the most beautiful city on Earth, within which you have this museum that is probably the most amazing museum on Earth. It's nearly 100,000 square meter exhibition capacity. It's huge. It's absolutely huge. So, no, it should not change. What should change is, the, as you said in your introduction, the embarrassment for France today is because we have a lack of accountability in our system, in our organization, in our decision model, from top, I mean the Elysium and the President of the Republic, to bottom. I mean the security services within the museum. So there is a lack of responsibility and accountability. When you see the Minister of Culture, Mrs. Rachida Dati, for whom I have the utmost respect, saying that everything going well, there is no security problem in the Louvre. Mm. I give you a clue. Look at the news. Apparently there is. So the resignation should be on the table immediately. We have had the director and president of the Louvre providing a resignation to the French president, and the French president refused it, mm-hmm. denied. It's incomprehensible for the French citizen. First thing first, why did she present her resignation to the president? She should not have done that. If she resigned, it's to the Minister of Culture, or it's to she resigned and that's it. And the president doesn't have a say in this. She resigned, she's gone, and she has to go. And it's not because she failed. It's because she is responsible, then accountable. The director of the security should have done the same. In 1911, the Joconde was stolen from the Louvre.
The Mona Lisa.
Mm-hmm. The Mona Lisa was stolen from the Louvre. The very next second the news hit the air, the minister in charge of cultural good resigned. Mm. The very next second. Of course, and he was not responsible of that. We cannot hold him responsible, but he's accountable. Accountability is a big issue.
Do you agree with that? There's an air of unaccountability right now in France when it comes to these issues?
I don't know if I can say this because I'm not French, but I think it's just like a feeling of responsibility, you know? And also, I don't know if the people who are sitting in the galleries, they were basically occupied with their cell phones. So it's something because they're overwhelmed. What can they do? We were in the great galleries and people are there. I think that even the people are sitting in the rooms, they should really know what they are dealing with. And they should perhaps have a little bit of a basic education on French culture and on French history in order to be aware that they're doing a very important job looking that one of the thousand tourists doesn't touch on a painting and keeps the distance and they just don't only do selfies.
All right, suspicions have not yet fallen on Anya Firestone, even though she was at the scene of the crime the day before.
Yes.
Tell us about that.
The day before, I did have clients. It was a couple from the United States. And I happened to have created a visit about the romance between Napoleon and Josephine and their role in art and fashion. So the visit started in the Louvre, and we did have a good amount of time in the Apollo Gallery looking at the exact pieces that unfortunately were stolen, and moving from the Louvre to Place Vendôme to see also the impact on these pieces, not just as beautiful objects, but the kind of style that they gave off to all of the luxury houses that exist today.
Among them, it's ironic,
yes.
Pieces that had belonged to Empress Eugenie,
yes.
Which had been sold off at auction in 1887 because
yes.
It was Republican France wanted to mark a break with
yes.
Emperors
yes.
and royalty.
But that to me is what's...
And then they were bought back?
Well, yes, and it's to me one of the most interesting things to look at these objects, not just for their beauty, but these are really telling the story of French history. And in fact, as you go through the Apollo Gallery, one of the other stones that was not taken, the Regent Diamond, I mean, that's coming from before the time of the Empire. So we kind of move in that gallery from Louis XIV, and then we get to Napoleon, and we get to Napoleon III, and we see, in fact, this transition from monarchy to republic. And those jewels are also testament to that. Even how the style of them changed is very important.
And they went to great lengths, Joachim Murat, to buy back these jewels, which had been
absolutely,
which had come up at auction, and now they're stolen.
Oh, that's the double dip in the disappointment, because you know all these crown jewels were sold initially by Jules Ferry, who was the prime minister at the time
after the fall of Louis Napoleon.
Exactly. Jules Ferry was in the 1887. Yes,
yeah.
After Napoleon III. Sorry, yeah, absolutely right. So he sold them because he's a Republican. So he's a leftist. He's a Republican. He said those are monarchists. Blah. Let's sell it for the equivalent of approximately €3 billion today. That was the amount he sold. He sold more than what that has been stolen today. And he sold them. And during the time, the French state and the French citizen, particularly the Association of the Louvre supporters, bought back all of this jewelry. Four of the out of the eight jewels that have been stolen 2-3 days ago have been bought back by the Friends of the Louvre. So it cost us million. In addition to the tax we pay that make it running and that help the museum to buy art piece, you had some private citizens that give lots of money, or a little amount of money, but lots of citizens, to buy back those jewels, and now they're gone.
Arthur Brandt, what's the chances of recovering those precious diamonds?
Well, it's a race against time. The police is now trying to find these four men. They probably will. I'm positive about that. But then, you know, will they find these four persons when they are still holding these objects? Because they try to sell them, they will dismantle these objects, they will take out the diamonds, and they will try to sell them on the black market. There was another museum robbed in France last month, the Natural History Museum. Yesterday, somebody was arrested for it in Barcelona with the gold that was stolen, but that gold already had been melted down. So it's a race against time. I hope they catch the thieves, and they will catch the thieves within a couple of days. And I'm quite positive about that.
In the case of diamonds, you can't melt them down. So what's the point of stealing diamonds?
Well, these smaller diamonds, they are easily sellable. They are so common. The bigger ones, you know, they can make smaller diamonds or cut them a little bit so that they have a different shape. And even them, you might be able to sell maybe somewhere in India, Qatar, Dubai. But the smaller ones, they are easily sellable, unfortunately.
All right, a lot of unverified speculation over the attack itself. There was a video shared from a mobile device to an all-news station, BFM, that purports, you can see it there, to show the actual heist taking place, that man in the high-vis vest there. This, again, has not been verified, but it's been shared. Arthur Brand, you said it just a moment ago that you're convinced that the culprits will be caught. What makes you say that?
Well, I'm doing this now for 20 years, and in most cases, they catch the thieves. In these days, you know, with DNA, with fingerprints, these thieves left some stuff behind. You saw that they were taking fingerprints. So, and they have a criminal record, these four people. So they will get arrested. But then again, do they have these crowns still lying under their bed, or did they get rid of them? We had a big, big robbery in the Netherlands last year. A golden helmet was stolen. It came from Romania. After 4 days, the Dutch police was able to catch the thieves, but the helmet, the golden helmet, is still gone.
The president of the Louvre, as was referenced there by Joachim Murat, was up before a French Senate panel earlier. She had a bit of emotion in her voice as she read her opening statement, acknowledging there were failings in security.
Years, the museum has experienced a decline in its security and surveillance staff. Under my leadership, however, these staff numbers have not decreased. In fact, since 2022, they have increased by 5.5%, thanks to the direct recruitment authorized by the Ministry of Culture. As for procedures, I believe it is always essential to seek external expertise to evaluate our working methods. At the beginning of this year, I requested the Prefecture of Police to conduct a review of our nighttime security operations. The report was submitted this summer, and we will be implementing its recommendations.
Yeah, you were complaining earlier, Joachim Murat, that there's a lack of accountability there. What's your reaction listening to that clip in particular?
So nice. She acknowledged there is a problem with security. That's extremely nice. Okay, and so now she has resigned. She should not be maintaining her job. She's not an incompetent or an irrelevant or a non-professional girl. She's just... She was the president of the Louvre. She has to go to another place. It's not possible. You can do that to the French citizen. We have been shocked and hurt. The security head and the head of the Louvre have to go. And that's it. And we don't blame them as a person. We consider it as a symbolic gesture for us, citizens. It was their responsibility. Apparently, something failed. That's as simple as that. It's not as an individual or as a person that they are finger-pointed. They were in charge. That's part of the job description. You failed so bad. I mean, go. That's all. The head of security has not yet resigned. Mm-hmm. It's a scam. She should have.
What's the precedent, Arthur Brand, in previous cases? Do museum heads resign in other countries?
No, not often. I do understand this feeling because they are responsible, of course. But we must understand that this happened to the British Museum, to museums in the Netherlands, in the United States. It's a broader problem. We need to spend more on security in museums. There's not going enough money to these museums. And as has been said here, this is our heritage, world heritage. And if you let thousands of people in every day, the guards, they cannot wear arms. Because, you know, you don't want to have shootings there. So the glass should be thicker. The vitrines should have thicker glass so that it will take thieves longer to take away these jewels. And, you know, they need 7 minutes. They took 7 minutes, and it was too fast. If the glass would have been thicker, if there would have been more security that maybe could have done something, they wouldn't have pulled this off. But it's a broader problem. Of course, somebody should take responsibility, but it's a problem worldwide. Believe me, it's happening everywhere.
It's happening everywhere, but it's happened here in France. Social media having a field day, recycling images of Inspector Clouseau, Ocean's 11, as was said by the panel. And then, of course, there's the Mona Lisa herself, who's been appearing in this meme. She's waiting for the bus. I guess she's trying to make a getaway. There was also, we mentioned earlier, the British Museum being the target of attacks. One saying, will the British Museum be opening a new exhibition? As a bit of a tongue-in-cheek remark there on X, formerly Twitter. And then, of course, lots of stereotypes about the French themselves, including one saying the fact that the Louvre heist didn't take place at dawn, but at the very reasonable hour of 9:30 a.m. shows even French jewel thieves have a better work-life balance than us. I guess, Anya Firestone, your feed has been inundated with these kinds of remarks. Is it funny? Or when you heard this news, you say, take this seriously, perhaps?
Unfortunately, it's terrible news. But we're in an age today with social media when that news, and just the entire thing, it's out of some, you know, Grace Kelly old movie. It's not something we would actually would believe that would happen, and it did. And the fact that it happened so quickly, I mean, I'm a licensed guide in the Louvre. It's very difficult to find anything in the Louvre in 7 minutes. And these guys did. And so the response and such for many is humor because they're outraged. But also for us, I mean, myself, who was just with these stones, you know, less than 24 hours before at the museum, it's also a tragic loss. So I see, sure, a lot of memes and humor on social media, and it can lighten the mood and maybe provide some optimism. But it's become truly romanticized as a cinematic heist in a way. And that's what gets the people excited. And I actually think it's going to get more people into the museum.
All right, and that harks back to the detachment that you were describing to us witnessing inside the Louvre, where people are no longer watching the paintings, but it's taking pictures of themselves watching the paintings.
The action of being seen there and having done it, you know,
right.
Which is the problem today.
Now, there's been, of course, a lot of political fallout here. Far-right leader Jordan Bardella calling the heist an unbearable humiliation for our country. On X, he said, how far will the disintegration of the state go? This is Marine Le Pen's surrogate. Tuesday's front page of French tabloid Le Parisien headlines, they've stolen the history of France. Have they stolen the history of France? Is that taking it a little too far?
No, of course not, because the history is very rich. It's different folds, and I just hoped that people would visit other places such as only the Louvre. I'm coming from a visit with a German group today from the German embassy, where I'm the curator for the historic collections. We went to Rambouillet, which was opened just a few months ago with wonderful restored apartments and other parts which are actually just as they are.
Yeah, this is a big castle outside of Paris.
It's a big castle, like 30 minutes out of Paris, very easy to be joined. And I can just tell you the wealth of French culture sites and the reception you find by the people who are there is so wonderful that you should just tell people that they also use other places, you know. And France has enough in the Île-de-France that many tourists who come could also not only focus on Versailles and on the Louvre, but use some other sites to visit because they're there. And the structures are prepared to have more visitors. On Bouillet, there was a very small group, and we were received like kings because we had somebody with us. It was absolutely wonderful and fantastic. So there are other places around, you know?
There are other places around, but Joachim Murat was saying it, that this was 2 days ago when you came on for us, that you know the emotion worldwide, the shock is akin to what happened when Notre Dame, the cathedral, burned in 2019. Yeah. What makes the Louvre so special as a sort of a global icon?
It's known that it's the biggest museums. They publish very proudly their enormous numbers. And I think it's, isn't this the highest of some art pieces like the Mona Lisa or things which really make it? Because nobody goes to see the wonderful galleries with 17th century paintings from the galleries of Louis XIV. They're just there and there's hardly anybody there. My personal wing of the decorative arts, which has been fantastically installed, they are very empty and the people are trotting through them and taking their selfies with Marie Antoinette's desk or whatever. But the Louvre is so rich and so full, and there's probably just like a major attraction, you know, for...
Anya Firestone, what makes the Louvre special to you, and what makes it special to your visitors that you take through? What do they see the first time they go in?
Well, firstly, I think often clients will say, Anya, I've been to Paris. What is a hidden gem museum that I don't know about? And I often say the Louvre, because there are thousands and thousands of objects. And it's true, not everybody is going into the decorative arts wing. They're often going to see the Venus de Milo and the Mona Lisa. But to me, I could even do a visit of the Louvre and look at no art and no jewelry and look physically at the building itself and the walls, the doors, the floors, the ceilings. I mean, the building itself is not just a museum. It wasn't built as a museum. And ironically, it was built as a fortress in about 1200 to protect the treasures of France, to protect against invasion. And then, of course, it becomes a royal residence. But then it was so impactful when it opened as a museum, because this is 1793, so this is...
The French Revolution.
Exactly, but this was symbolic. It wasn't just, oh, let's have a very fabulous exhibition to celebrate. This is a space for the kings and the queens, and suddenly now it's for the people. And so the building itself, like I would argue those specific jewels that were taken, are showing a very specific moment in French history when we're moving from the monarchy to a people. And to me, that museum represents all of that history and beyond French history, from antiquities in Mesopotamia to Italy. And of course, you know, it's more than just the Mona Lisa, but the history of the museum itself is extraordinary.
Do you agree with that, Arthur Brand, that the Louvre is unique, not just because of its size, but more because of its history?
Well, France has an enormous history, of course. And I think personally that the Louvre, together with the British museums, are the two top museums in the world. You can see everything there. The rich history, everybody talks about the Louvre. Even the books from Dan Brown mention the Louvre. You know, it's the best museum in the world.
All right,
unfortunately, it's in France and not in Amsterdam and where I live.
But you have some pretty good museums there yourself. We could the list runs long when it comes to Amsterdam. Back in January, France's president promised 800 million euros of renovations that would extend until 2031, the biggest makeover since that 1980s construction of EMP's glass pyramid entrance.
C'est un Louvre repensé, restauré, agrandi.
The Louvre will be rethought, restored and enlarged to become the epicenter of art history for our country and beyond. This will involve first and foremost the creation of a vast, efficient new entrance at the level of the Perrault Colonnade, which will rebalance the way visitors experience the Louvre.
Vaste et efficace qui permettra de rééquilibrer là aussi la manière de visiter.
Reopening it and giving access back to Parisians.
Giving access back to Parisians. You heard the revolutionary roots of the concept of this museum. What's your reaction, though, when you hear it from the mouth of the French president?
I was very, very happy with the declaration of the French president back in January. So that's very nice. But back in January again, I don't think that most of the 600 million budget was accredited to security. It was accredited to huge infrastructural works to increase the fluidity of the access and so on. Not really security. Security, as Mr. Brown very precisely said, is always the last thing that is taken care of by a museum direction, by a museum management. Why? Because the museum management are art experts. They are not security experts. You cannot blame the head of a museum to put the access to the art piece as the absolute priority, as the paramount of his mission. Of course, sometimes down the line, they forgot that when you have many people facing an art piece, one of them could think, hey, why not on my room. Just take it and steal it. So I will not blame the management of the Louvre for that. They have this mindset of showing to as many people as possible as many art pieces as possible. But when you have that kind of responsibility, you cannot take security seriously enough.
Mm. Anya Firestone, to pay for these big renovations, there was, among other things, the raising of the price of entrance. Mm-hmm. A justified move?
I think justified up to a certain point, because the museum and any museum should be accessible to all. Not everybody should need to have to go and, use their life savings to have a special experience there. So I understand the raise in the price, but I don't think it should come necessarily from the museum visitors. I think all museums need to do a great job in having, donors and patronage, because the visitors are those who the museum is for. And historically, that was truly the point.
There's a criticism that's leveled at the Louvre, but also leveled at all the big museums of its kind, like the Metropolitan in New York City, Ernst Ulrich Leben, which is that it's supposed to be a people's palace, but there's a lot of works that don't get exposed.
Yes.
That are in the back room.
And, in the back room and which are not seen. And I think raising the price could be a good idea to...
Should the Louvre sell off some of those or loan some of those items that it has in its
Well, they're doing this already. The Louvre in Lens. And I think there's another one which has opened, which is a very good idea in order to...
Franchising it.
And franchising it and bringing art to the so-called province or dans les départements.
To Abu Dhabi as well.
No, that's a business model, I think. It's rather a business model from which some have some benefit and the museum can do things with it. But you should handle that with great care, because I don't see these unique artworks traveling the world. You know, I think this is rather... People should rather come to the center of the Louvre to see them here. But I think you should find a balance between choosing the people who go in or pay a higher price and letting other groups or other people or children and students in there very easily, you know? And it used to be normal that when I was a student in Paris, there were groups of children going into the Louvre. I don't see them today, and I don't know if you can easily do this still, because it's so overcrowded.
It's hard on a Wednesday, which is the day little kids don't have school.
On Wednesdays, you'll see a lot of children or groups of children. And the tour groups also, I mean, they do make it quite restrictive to reserve as a group. Because legally, when you are more than seven people with the guide, that's considered a group. Mm-hmm. And you have to make an additional reservation. And the museum does make that quite difficult. You might have to reserve months and months in advance. I think what needs to happen is that also visitors need to reserve well in advance with their own proper time slot, because then they could perhaps limit the amount of people that go in one day so that there's space around the works. It's not pleasurable to experience these pieces with so many people moving in front of you.
Let me ask you, Arthur Brand, the Louvre does have a lot of security, 1,200 guards, 52 firefighters, but spending that's decreased over the last 20 years. And as pointed out by Elaine Chelino in the New York Times, only a quarter of the famed Richelieu wing's 182 rooms have security cameras. Yeah, how do you pay for it? Do you pay for it with higher ticket prices, or do you pay for it with perhaps more state subsidies? By the way, France is broke right now. Or do you perhaps get some of those works that nobody is seeing and figure out a way to monetize those?
Well, you know, you can put as many cameras there as possible, but that wouldn't have prevented this theft. You know, these guys run into this building and with a ladder, and they stepped out. You know, you can watch them on the cameras, but that will not stop them. So there should be other measures taken, more security guards, better windows, better locks, and also cameras, of course. But, you know, there have been museum thefts done at gunpoint. What are you going to do with cameras against people with guns?
All right, so it will, of course, continue to happen no matter what. Joachim Murat, Are you looking forward to your next visit to the Louvre?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
What will you go see?
And I really don't want the Louvre to sell its art piece just to finance its security.
Okay.
Yeah. It's a no-go.
What will you be going
as,
to see?
As I always do, my first visit is to the big painting of Jacques-Louis David of the Crowning of the Emperor. And it's an incredible masterpiece. Just behind you have the Delacroix. That is, so most of the time I go visiting the French painting wing. And with my son, I go to visit the mummies, the Egyptian
collection. Antiques.
And I have this this habit with my sons that I bring him every week to have an ice cream in the Louvre, then he associate visiting a museum with enjoyment, something nice. It's a way to train him to like museum, and he really enjoys it. He's 4 years old.
On your Firestone, what's your recipe for avoiding what Ernst was saying, taking the boxes of Versailles, Louvre, and Eiffel Tower? When you take your visitors to the Louvre, what do you show them that perhaps opens their eyes to something they wouldn't have thought about seeing?
To me, I mean, it's about storytelling. It's about showing that in that one, albeit massive, building, you can look at the entire history of art from when civilization began, when art was something of declaration of power. You can see how it's evolved from antiquities to Greece to Italy to France. And in fact, I think what's so interesting is the Louvre's, like the paintings, they end in 1848. They end at that very specific time when French history completely changes and we're entering the people's time, except for some of those jewels, actually, which are almost some of the most modern pieces there.
That's right. The Impressionists are all across the river at the Musée d'Orsay.
Yes, but in fact, what I love to do when I take clients typically to the Louvre and the next day the Orsay, because the Louvre ends with that Lady Liberty Leading the People by Delacroix. And to me, she's kind of exiting the Louvre, but she's exiting part one of art history, which the Louvre showcases, which was all about branding and power and propaganda for kings and queens from the apostles to Napoleon. And then you cross the water and you get to the Musée d'Orsay. And the first thing you see there is the Statue of Liberty replica. The same woman that ends the Louvre in Delacroix is the one who greets you at the Musée d'Orsay, whose collection, by the way, is 1848 to 1914. So not even 100 years. And in that museum, you see how art history completely changed because there was no monarchy, because there were no powers. So you have two different stories, and the Louvre I see as really part one of art history that ends with, sadly, the jewels that we don't have right now.
All right, and in a word, Ernst Ulrich Leben, what's your happy place at the Louvre?
The decorative arts department. Yeah. And then I can rave about the monarchy and those craftsmen who did these incredible works. And this is a top subject in world history, is that French art history really reached a peak. And I think Paris in the 18th century, which the Louvre presents, was like what is New York or Shanghai for us today, or was New York in the 20th century. It's just like the hotspot where you could go, you could, if you would be willing to do something, you could flower with this very rigid society, but which was a consumer society and an early state. At the same time, with the Age of Enlightenment, there is a new bourgeoisie coming up, people who want money. There's a great democratization in the field of the decorative arts, because even bourgeois people who didn't have a title of nobility were able to buy fine furniture, which was provided for by a plenty of artists. You see in the inventories of the craftsmen that they have silver, table silver instead of tin spoons, and they want to be fine. So the aristocratic model kind of filters down, and it's just the beginning of modern consumer society.
Kind of a different way of looking at that beginning of the modernity that we know. Ernst Ulrich Leben, you can see it in the same building that houses the Mona Lisa, but far from the maddening crowds. Thank you for being with us here.
Thank you. In the
France 24 debate, I want to thank Anya Firestone, Prince Joachim Murat, and Arthur Brand for being with us from Amsterdam. Thank you for being with us here in the France 24 debate.